trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Michael Lehman's 1988 film, Heathers. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Ben, hold on to your robo butts.
That sounded like you were preparing to say something else, but something else just never came. Okay, all right.
There's a couple connections in there. Let's see if our listeners can figure it out.
All right, I'm clueless on that. So with us also is the associate editor for filmschoolrejects.com, friend of the show, all-around cool chick, Kate Erbland. Kate, thanks for coming back and hanging out with us on the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Thank you for having me back again after my last performance.
Oh, yeah.
Ben, you didn't use her nickname.
Oh, Tyler, why don't you tell her what nickname you came up with?
You know how we gave Allison Folklore the nickname?
Yeah.
All right, you ready for yours?
Yeah.
It's Kate, I come from a land down under bland. It's a mouthful, but it's catchy once you say it a couple times.
Wow.
So I'm really hoping that we can slip that in seamlessly later on in this episode, so we'll see what happens with that. Stay tuned.
That's all up to you, Ben. Just be like, I come from a land down under bland. What do you have to say about this part?
That's beautiful. I really like it. It's unexpected.
Oh, yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I believe you have the character name game for us this week.
Yes, I do. All right. The character name game for this week, can you hear me?
Yes.
It's Matt Thompson.
Matt Thompson, okay.
Matt Thompson.
So Kate and I will come back at the end of this episode and try to guess what movie that character is from, keeping in mind there has to be some sort of loose connection to a movie that came out this past weekend in theaters. So
very, very loose connection.
With Tyler, you never know just how loose that connection is going to be. So let's go ahead and move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, or concerts, or books we've been reading, pretty much any sort of pop culture related stuff. Tyler, we typically start with you. Let's keep that going. What have you been consuming this week?
All right. Well, this week I finally got a chance because Netflix put them all, or most of them, on Instant. Friday the 13th Part 3, after our episode of Parts 1 and 2. I had to see when Jason got the old hockey mask going, and it was definitely in Part 3, which originally, like Jaws 3, was set up to be in 3D.
Oh.
So it was very, very gimmicky, like a lot of, hey, look, this is coming at you, like people like putting stuff in front of the camera and, you know, axes and Jason kind of like stumbling towards the camera in 3D. Regrettably, though, no 3D when I watched it, so
right.
Didn't work as well. And his motivation's not really there in this film either. Before it was like, oh, you came to Crystal Lake. It's your fault that I'm killing you because you're basically trespassing and, you know, and people had killed his mom. So he killed other people that are related to that. These were just kids that went to like a farmhouse and Jason just happens to want to kill every single one. And there's an ending. I'm not going to say it's a twist ending because it doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I was going to say Jaws 3D, Friday the 13th Part 3. I guess you have to watch it if you want to see 4 through in space. And so take that as you will. Very gimmicky, not very scary at all.
Okay.
There aren't even really any jump moments there are in kind of the first two, I guess, or especially in the first one. Still the best ending, I think, or one of the best endings in movies at the end of Friday the 13th.
First. Kate, have you seen any of the Friday the 13th movies?
I've seen, like, I guess all of them, but not for a long time. I think maybe I saw the original and also in space most recently, which was probably like 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
So.
Okay. All right. Didn't know if you were like a secret diehard Friday the 13th fan or something.
No, wouldn't that be fun though?
It would. It would.
Oh, we could really have a conversation.
What else you need to check out?
I think he gets like a super shredder upgrade in Jason in space.
Yeah.
Like, he comes up in space as like the ragged living under the lake Jason, and then he like drinks some ooze, I suppose, and turns into Super Jason.
We can only hope that you end up watching it and talking about it in detail on this podcast. So.
And you can guarantee that's going to happen then.
All right, good.
Another show I've been checking out on HBO. I'm still going through my HBO library of stuff. Veep. Have you heard of this? Have you seen this?
I've heard of it. I've not seen it.
Allison loves it. Allison is like really into it right now, and she keeps telling me to watch it, but I'm behind on a lot of TV, so I haven't yet taken the plunge with Veep.
Okay.
I'm not surprised that Folklore digs Veep, because it's a good show. She likes good stuff, I guess. Elaine Benes from Seinfeld is basically the vice president. Not a lot of power with the vice presidency, Ben. There's really only two things you do as vice president.
Mm-hmm.
You're president of the Senate, and you only vote when there's a tie.
Okay.
Or you take the place of the president when he is incapable of being president, or she. And other than that, you're pretty much just kind of on your own. And if you're fairly useless, like she is in the show, like the president never asks her to do anything. She's always asking her secretary if the president called. And it's kind of funny because she's kind of this like underdog, I guess, politically. Like, things keep messing up, and she gets like bad reputations, and the news is always kind of attacking her. It's a very office. I don't want to say it's office like, but it's kind of like, it's one of those cameras on the scene kind of show, but they don't have like fake interviews like they do on like Parks and Rec and stuff like that.
Right.
But it's it's kind of like that. There isn't like a it's not laugh out loud funny, but just kind of like that awkward but kind of humorous. Humor, I think, is what I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
And Buster Bluth is in it too.
Oh, excellent.
That's all you need to know.
What is that guy's name? Tony Hale, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Buster Bluth, I think.
Elaine Benes and Buster Bluth co-starring in Veep.
In Veep.
Cool. Anything else, Tyler?
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right, let's go to Kate. What have you been checking out this week?
Well, I've been checking out actually kind of a lot of stuff. I didn't even think of TV, but I've been watching Breaking Bad,
which I've
never watched it, and obviously, you know, everyone I know watches it and loves it. So in preparation for the fifth season, I've been marathoning it with my boyfriend, who's staring at me right now. And so we just finished, we did one episode of season three yesterday.
Mm.
So we're like, we're right on track, and I'm all in. Yeah.
Kate, I'm not going to tell you anything about the show other than it gets so much better than what it is right now.
And that's what like a lot of people say. And I felt like, I think that season two kind of feels a little slower because season one is like so compact because it's like, what, 7 episodes?
I think so.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm excited.
Yeah.
And terrified. Constantly terrified.
Yeah, that's really great. So Breaking Bad, definitely one of the best shows on TV. It comes back July 15th on AMC.
So, yeah, and I know a lot of people are doing that. Like, I think my boss, Neil, is going to start doing a Breaking Bad blog. So to get ready for that, he's been watching it. My friend Michaela's rewatching it. So now's the time.
Sweet.
Yeah.
A Breaking Bad blog?
Mm-hmm. Well, he does,
it's gonna
like...
be called...
Not a blog, like a wrap-up every day. Like, every week. He does a recap for Game of Thrones. So obviously now he's got
okay.
some room.
Yeah.
Is it called Breaking Blog?
Tyler, you need to trademark that right now.
Oh, Tyler.
WordPress right now.
If only you had thought of that, it's season one, because now they're going into like their last season. But
No, better late than never.
Indeed, indeed. All right, what else, Kate?
And then this week, just with movies, I had a really good movie-going week, which doesn't often happen when you're hitting screenings. I actually saw Damsels in Distress again. It came out in April, I believe, and no one really saw it. And they did a one week run at Cinefamily, which is a movie theater here in LA. And so I took a couple of people to go see it who I knew would probably like it because they didn't see it. And they loved it. and like the audience response was really great, and it was kind of fun to watch because I saw Lola Versus a couple weeks ago and I didn't really like it, and it was nice to see this and remember, like, oh yes, Greta Gerwig is really charming.
I don't know if a lot of our listeners know what Damsels in Distress is. Why don't you tell people just kind of in the most basic terms?
It's a movie by Whit Stillman, who hadn't made a movie for like over a decade, and it stars Greta Gerwig and some other lovely ladies as these college girls who kind of live in their own little world where they want to help people, but they're sort of really inept at it. And it's like funny, and there's like musical sequences and Adam Brody dances, but it's like, it's, you know, it's sort of a gentle-hearted comedy that's set now, but it could have been set anywhere.
Okay.
So it's fun. It's really funny, though. I don't know if I'm selling that so much.
All right. And this is about to come out on home video at some point soon, right?
It's coming out in the next couple of months. End of
home
July.
Video.
Yep, July, actually.
Home video, Tyler? Is that not?
VHS. Coming out on VHS.
Yes, it's a collector's item.
Yeah, collector, two cassette collector's edition. And get the book on tape.
But then in terms of movies that are coming out in theaters soon, I saw Sarah Polley's Take This Waltz, which stars Michelle Williams and Seth Rogen. There's this very sweet married couple who maybe don't have a tremendous amount of passion for each other. And then she meets the rickshaw driver across the street, and he is real sexy. And you can probably put together what happens from that.
Hello.
I saw this trailer yesterday, and I've got to be honest, Kate. Like, these movies about infidelity, I feel like, are becoming the norm now. Like, even a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, I feel like it wasn't as prevalent as it is now in movies. But, like, even in something like The 5-Year Engagement, which is an otherwise kind of harmless studio comedy, there always seems to be this element of infidelity that creeps into a lot of these mainstream movies today. It kind of bothers me that it's...
Well, you can't really say no to a rickshaw driver, Ben.
No, and he's a professional rickshaw driver, but then also...
Professional.
He's a painter. He just paints for himself, though.
I am already considering infidelity right there.
When I first heard about this movie, I was really, like, excited because the director, Sarah Polley, did the Julie Christie movie Away From Her, which was nominated for a couple Academy Awards a couple years ago, which is a really beautiful movie about a marriage. And I was like, oh, I know she's doing this infidelity thing. And I was convinced that I was going to see this movie, and I was just going to, like, hate Michelle Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to really want to just punch her in the face if I ever saw her. And the movie does a much better job of not putting you on her side, but understanding her side more than you might think just from a trailer or something.
Okay.
So it's not as wrenching as it sounds, but it's still pretty wrenching.
All right.
And yeah. I think there's like moviegoers are like, oh, well, I've considered infidelity before. And it's kind of exciting to them to see it kind of, because you think in your head, you're like, well, okay, what if I cheated on my wife/husband? What would occur? And then you go and see these movies and you're like, well, that didn't turn out too well. I better not be infidelitous to my spouse. And I think it is kind of like an exciting enticement in movies to be kind of like carry out fantasies and stuff without actually hurting somebody. Like, you just see it in film and you get the hurt and whatever from the film. And then maybe, you know, that's enough for some people without actually having to, you know, go to some dreary apartment or hotel room like downtown Soho or something like that to meet with your lover.
You can spare it from your real life. I guess that's a valid thing. I don't know, for me it's just like it's getting a little bit old and kind of not old, because it's like a standard point in storytelling. I mean, it's like a kind of a mainstay, but just
it's a tale as old as time, Ben.
Right, the prevalence of it, I think, is kind of getting to me. But anyway, anything else you've been checking out, Kate?
And then I saw a screening of Lynn Sheldon's Your Sister's Sister, which stars Mark Duplass Rosemary DeWitt and Emily Blunt, and it was at Sundance, and I missed it this year, just didn't work into my schedule, and I'm really happy that I caught it, because it's just, it's great. It's Mark Duplass and, what's her face, Emily Blunt are, like, best friends, and she used to date his brother, who has, when the movie opens, they're celebrating a year since his brother passed away, and they're trying to celebrate his life, and Mark Duplass isn't doing so well. And so Emily Blunt is like, oh, you know, go to my dad's cabin, spend some time. And when he shows up, Emily Blunt's sister, Rosemary DeWitt, is there, and she's going through something emotional. And then some stuff happens between them, and then Emily Blunt shows up. And it's, but there's some twists to it that you might not expect.
Yeah, it's a really self-contained movie. I did actually see it at Sundance. I liked it a lot. It's very small scale and, like, really kind of reliant on great performances and a really good script and you know, solid direction, too, for something like it could very easily have been a boring movie with a premise like that. But I think they do a good job of making it really compelling. The characters are really well drawn and the acting is great all around. So yeah, I would definitely recommend people going to check that out. Your Sister's Sister, which I think, yeah, like you said, comes out soon, right? It had like a, or is it getting a limited run or is it full release? Do you know anything about that?
I suspect.
No, I don't, Ben. Limited,
but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Within the, I'll check. I know it should be within the next month if they're screening it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, awesome. All right, well, I had a rare thing happen to me this week, and I think this is the first time this has happened.
Infidelity.
Since... yes, infidelity. This is the first time this has happened since this podcast's inception. So we're on episode, I think, 92 right now.
92.
And this has never happened. I watched a movie every single night of the week this week. And,
please tell me you have all seven. You're going to talk about all seven of them.
Well... seven, I mean, starting on Monday.
Okay,
and
six.
And then today doesn't count, so.
Okay.
Anyway, okay, so
that's
I'll go
pretty
through.
Sweet, man. We should celebrate that right now.
It just is, yeah.
Pat yourself on the back.
Huzzah.
Okay. I'm going to give you a cyber pat right
so
here.
So I'll give you, and these movies are pretty varied, too, so I'll run through them briefly and, you know, kind of delve into each one just a little bit. Monday night, I watched The Descendants for the first time, the George Clooney movie. I think, Tyler, you've talked about that on this podcast before.
Yeah.
Kate, I assume you've seen The Descendants.
I have seen it.
Okay. I liked the movie. I thought it was really solid storytelling. Again, good performances. You know, deals with a kind of...
infidelity!
Boom!
Yes. Infidelity, I was going to say, deals with like a downer subject in a, you know, a fairly lighthearted way. I think I liked watching Clooney and his daughters work through that infidelity subplot together and kind of watch them become closer as a family than they were before. I don't want to get too much into the movie because I think people should see it and I don't want to spoil anything or anything like that, but
it's not that infidelity applied. I've said that. I don't know.
Well, what's his name? Matthew Lillard surprised me in this movie with a fairly small role, but I was like, oh, it's good to see Matthew Lillard working. I know he's kind of moved into directing recently. I think he directed a movie called Fat Kid Rules the World that played at South by Southwest. Kate, did you see that at South by?
I did not see it, but I think people liked it a lot, and I know that he just did a Kickstarter campaign to like help it get released or something.
Yeah, I actually wrote about that in Kickstart This, my column at firstshowing.net, so people can check that out there.
Isn't that the guy that played Shaggy in the Scooby-Doo movies?
It is, yes.
Oh, brother.
And now he's directing.
Yes. But Boinks. Yeah, Descendants, good stuff. Recommended. Okay, so Tuesday night, this is probably the most fun night of the week for me. My roommate, my girlfriend, and I went and saw this movie called Rowdy Rathore, which is an Indian film, an Indian action film. It's basically...
Indian or Native American?
No, like Indian, like
the subcontinent.
Yeah. So this movie is awesome, and if you have the chance, I would recommend going to check it out. It's basically like... It's kind of like two movies in one. The first half of the movie is like, it's about this guy who his name is Shiva, and he lives in Mumbai, and he's like a small-time thief, kind of little criminal dude who teams up with a couple friends, and he like just scams people, and he's like a little con man, and he falls in love with this really gorgeous woman, and he like basically cons her into falling in love with him. But it's this really kind of sweet love story, and there are these awesome like Bollywood-esque dance numbers and songs and stuff in it, and it's just really kind of hilarious and very entertaining for somebody like me who doesn't really get into the whole Bollywood culture very often. I don't think I've ever seen a real Bollywood movie. Closest I've come is like Slumdog Millionaire or something, which is very Americanized. So
that was my next question. Did Shiva appear on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
No, it wasn't. Okay. It wasn't quite that much of a ripoff. Okay, so then it gets into this love story between them, and then there's also like the second half of the movie is about this guy named Rathor, who is a like, if you guys have seen Hot Fuzz, the Edgar Wright movie with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, Simon Pegg's character plays this like super cop named Nicholas Angel, who's like this, you know, epic, really badass guy that kind of comes to this small town. That's basically what happens in the second part of this movie with this guy named Rathor, except he looks identical to Shiva. So it's like this Prince and the Pauper type of thing where there's a mistaken identity thing going on, and there's these gang members and stuff after Rathor, but then they come after Shiva, and then there's a child involved, and the whole love story gets very tangled and everything. My only kind of down, like, I don't know, negative thing
criticism
to say about the movie, yeah, is that it runs a little long, and the gag kind of doesn't last as long as the filmmakers would like, I think. It does, however, in the second half, pick up like really a lot with the action. Tyler, you and I have watched a lot of these Tony Jaa movies and stuff, and there's action in here that is, you know, not quite on par with Tony Jaa because he's freaking awesome, but pretty good, like right below, I'd say one rung below Tony Jaa level of action. So
But where Tony Jaa climbs onto that rung and jumps up like 30 rungs.
I mean, where else are you going to find a movie that has like Bollywood dance numbers, just a ridiculous kind of Hot Fuzz-esque subplot, and Tony Jaa level fights? I don't know. Sure. Rowdy Rathor is where you're going to track that down. It's playing in limited release right now. I doubt anybody's going to be able to see it in theaters unless you live in Los Angeles or a kind of a comparable city. But if you guys ever come across this on Blu-ray or something like that, Rowdy Rathor, check it out. Okay, so next up,
Number three.
Yeah, Elite Squad, the first movie. I had seen Elite Squad, The Enemy Within, which is the second movie in the series. This is directed by Jose Padilla, who's going to be directing the upcoming RoboCop movie.
That was part of my reference from at the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. In Jurassic Park, Samuel L. Jackson says, hold on to your butts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And since he's going to be in the new RoboCop, I said, hold on to your robo-butts.
Okay. Oh. I knew what both of those things were, but
Secrets revealed, Ben.
That's pretty next level right there.
Don't mock me, Kate. That was genius.
That is pretty very, in the words of Heather's.
Yeah. It's going to be very...
Okay, so...
I'm just kidding, Kate. I wasn't mad at you.
Tyler, you've seen Elite Squad, The Enemy Within, correct?
No.
No, okay. All right, Kate, have you?
Yeah, I did. I saw it at Laugh a couple years ago.
Okay. I really like that movie a lot. This first one is essentially the same thing. It's just on a much, much smaller scale. I saw the second one first, so I think I liked that one first because of how similar these two... Or, I'm sorry, I like that one better because of how similar these two movies are. But it's, you know, again, Jose Padilla, great director, great action director, and he really kind of gets in there. It's very reminiscent of something like The Shield and a lot of these kind of modern cop shows that are really gritty and kind of the camera's right in there with all the action and stuff. I think I just like Elite Squad, The Enemy Within a little bit better because the scope is so much bigger in the second movie. So I believe the second one is streaming on Netflix Instant right now, and the first one I had to get through the DVD service, so it would probably just be, unless you're like a huge mega fan of the second one, then I would recommend watching the first one. Otherwise, you can probably just skip it and go straight to number two. So it's not like there's a ton of story elements that cross over where you're going to be.
You can pick it up pretty quickly in the second one, like yeah. What's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so then on Thursday.
Movie number four.
Thank you for announcing this. On Thursday, I watched The Cable Guy for the first time. Have you guys seen this?
Yes. Oh, Prison Rules, huh?
So, I don't know. Like, this movie, for as long as I've heard about it, has this negative stigma attached to it, and I didn't find it as bad as everyone claimed. I mean, I think the metaphor that Ben Stiller as a director is trying to get at gets a little heavy-handed at the end, where he's just essentially saying, like, TV is ruining everyone's minds, and at one point, the TVs in this town turn off, and Kyle Gass, who's the other member of Tenacious D alongside Jack Black, just like is sitting on the couch. He's sitting on the couch watching TV. The TV goes out, and he just like looks over and picks up a book and immediately starts reading it and smiling. And it's just like this really heavy-handed thing of like, hey, look what happens when you don't watch TV and it doesn't rot your brain anymore. But that being said, Jim Carrey's performance was not quite as endearing, I guess, as a lot of his other ones. But I still ended up liking this movie. What do you guys think about The Cable Guy?
I haven't seen it in like years and years, so I don't know.
I think there was a similar message about TV rotting your brain found in Batman Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Which also stars Jim Carrey. So,
yep.
As far as movies that star Jim Carrey about TV, I'm going to say Batman Forever is number one.
Then
I'm not going to fill in the rest of the slots.
Well, you could even talk about like The Truman Show.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's number one?
That would be my number, maybe number two.
Oh, wow.
Batman Forever is my favorite movie of all time.
Oh.
Jokingly so, but still.
Okay. So yeah, Cable Guy, not as bad as everybody thinks. So check it out if you haven't seen it. I don't know why it took me like whatever 15 years to watch that.
You ever seen that one where he loses his memory? What's that?
The Majestic. No,
The Majestic.
I've never seen
it. Yeah, don't care for Jim Carrey in dramatic roles, although I did like The Truman Show, which I think was I think that was his first kind of drama-esque movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
After like The Mask and
mm-hmm.
Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably the best Jim Carrey movie, Dumb and Dumber.
Okay. Yeah.
And then last night, to cap this
movie number five.
Yes. I went and saw Safety Not Guaranteed, which is playing in limited release here in, I think, LA, in New York, Seattle, and maybe Boston as well. Right now,
it's playing in Seattle.
Hopefully it's going to be expanding a little bit wider in the weeks to come. But this is a really great movie. I also saw it at Sundance, and I took a couple friends to go see it. It's a time travel movie that's not necessarily as much about time travel as something like Back to the Future or even like Time Crimes or something that you or Primer, any of the kind of classic time travel movies, but again, starring Mark Duplass, who we mentioned a couple times in this podcast already. Aubrey Plaza is in it. Jake Johnson, I think, from The New Girl,
mm-hmm.
is in this movie as well.
Nice.
Really, really awesome, awesome, awesome movie. This and The Raid were my two favorite films coming out of Sundance this year. So it definitely holds up on a second viewing. I think I actually liked it a little bit more on a second viewing, Safety Not Guaranteed. Kate, did you see it at Sundance?
It was my most anticipated movie of Sundance, and I think maybe I like oversold it to myself a little bit, because when I saw it, I liked it a lot, but I like didn't really love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had been thinking about it since January, so when I had the chance to go to another screening like, a couple weeks ago, I went, and it's just I liked it so much more on a second viewing, and I already liked it a lot, and it's like a second viewing, I loved it.
There's so much heart to it, and it just I don't know, it kind of by the end of the movie, like the whole thing is about Mark Duplass' character who puts this ad in a newspaper about, like a wanted ad about looking for a partner to go back in time with. And Aubrey Plaza plays an intern for Seattle Magazine, and she and Jake Johnson and a couple other people go to like, do a profile piece on Mark Duplass's character and see if this guy's really crazy or what his deal is. And Aubrey Plaza kind of gets in, like, kind of undercover style and realizes that he's this really, like, eccentric dude who, like, may or may not be telling the truth about what's going on here. And I think the whole movie kind of leads up to this question of, is this guy crazy or is he for real? And the way that the movie ends, which I'm obviously not going to give away, it just, the buildup is so great and the payoff is so awesome. I cannot recommend this movie enough to people. I think there's a sweetness to it. There's, comedy to it all the way throughout. Mark Duplass, who has, like, become this really, a force in the indie world over the past few years. I think this is my favorite performance of his. Just really awesome script, everything about it. This is why I go to see movies, for movies like Safety Not Guaranteed. Really, really great stuff. So check that out if you can. I don't think I can give it any more of a glowing recommendation than that. So, wow, that is going to bring us to the end of our lengthy media.
Wait, that was only 5 movies. I thought there were 6.
Well, was there one yesterday? Did I watch one yesterday? Heathers was yesterday. Because it's only noon right now.
Good transition.
Yeah, exactly. So, with that, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Heathers.
Heather Chandler. Heather McNamara. Heather Duke. Veronica Sawyer.
Why are you such a mega brat?
Because I can be.
The most powerful clique at Westerberg.
God, Veronica. Troll much?
Most people would die to get into it.
Heather number one just looked right at me.
I'm worshipped Westerberg, and I'm only a junior.
Veronica would kill to get out of it.
You were nothing before you met me. You were a Girl Scout cookie.
JD has come to answer her prayers.
I'm a no-rest build-up man myself.
We'll kill her.
He's got a way with women. A way with words.
Is this as good for you as it is for me?
Life can suck!
And a very special way with a gun. Veronica can't live with him.
Now!
I love my dead gay son.
And she can't live without him.
Does this turn out weak or what?
All right, so Heathers came out in 1988. This was directed by Michael Lehman, who, Tyler, I think we've talked about a movie on this podcast before that Michael Lehman also directed, and that is the one with Bruce Willis where he what is it called? Hudson Hawk. Michael Lehman also directed that movie, so interesting.
Hudson Hawk was terrible. Go back and listen to the episode, though. The episode was really good.
What's that, Kate?
I was looking at his IMDb profile last night, and, like, he has a very varied resume.
Yeah.
It's very.
It is.
Contribution.
He's directed, like, a bunch of TV over the past couple years. True Blood, Californication, American Horror Story, Dexter, Bored to Death. Like, a lot of really great TV. And then 40 Days and 40 Nights with Josh Hartnett. The Truth About Cats and Dogs and Hudson Hawk. And I think Heathers was actually his feature directorial debut. So
can you give it to me in layman's term, Ben?
Ooh, buddy. That man, you should
saved. I'll be here all episode, folks.
You should have saved that for the end, man. That's your closer. You're only going downhill from there.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, so I had never seen Heathers before. Tyler, I don't think you had either, right?
Nope.
Okay, so Kate, have you seen this movie before?
I had probably seen Heathers like 3 or 4 times, okay, but not within the past maybe 4 years.
Okay. Well, Kate, let's start with you. What did you think about this movie, just kind of general terms?
Despite like the fashion and the music, it still doesn't really feel dated because it's like, oh, high school sucked back then and it sucks for people now. And I think that, it like, you know, it would pair very well with Mean Girls, like maybe too well, but I don't know. It seems somewhat like less violent to me as I get older. You're like, oh, well, you know, a lot of people die, but people get blown up, but it's not, I don't know, I enjoyed it. I still think it's very funny, and I think it's really relevant even now for a high school movie.
Okay.
It's my broad thoughts.
All right, Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I went in thinking it was going to be a dark comedy, and I'm glad it was. I wanted to pair it up, not with Mean Girls, but with another one of my favorite dark comedies, John Cusack in Gross Point Blank, where he actually goes back to his high school, and you kind of see the results of, like, all these messed up people, like, high school kind of messed them up, I guess. And you can kind of see, like, a connection where, like, oh, well, here's people getting messed up in high school, and Gross Point Blank's kind of like, oh, here are the results of high school, basically, like 10 years later. Like, one guy's, like, bringing a gun to the reunion and stuff. And, you know, of course, John Cusack's, like, a self-employed assassin. And, but, yeah, I mean, I knew kind of what was going on. I thought there were vampires in this for some reason, but apparently, after watching it, no vampires. but I did like the aspect of kind of, like, peer pressure and this kind of thing with the media where people kind of latch on to, like, a specific aspect of what's going on in high school, and they kind of forget about everything else, and kind of like the know-nothing parents of Veronica's who just kind of go, like, they do the same thing every day, and she's the kind of the only one that notices those sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as dark, but it's very similar to, like, kind of a John Hughes kind of teen angst message. I don't think Hughes would go that dark, but it's along the same lines, I think.
I don't know. It sounds like you guys like this movie a hell of a lot more than I did, because I didn't.
A heather of a lot more.
Wow.
Going back up, Ben. Going back up.
No, I told you you're on the way down.
God damn.
No, I didn't. There's not a single thing about this movie that I liked, which wow. I'm surprised to say that. Like, okay, it's not as...
I'm turning my volume up just to hear.
It didn't... I didn't actively hate it in the same way I actively hate something like Just Go With It or, you know, like movies that piss me off because they're so terrible. I didn't really think that Heathers deserved that much, you know, bile. But there's, like, looking at the movie, taking a step back from it, there's not a single element of it that I enjoyed. Like, the performances I didn't care for. None of the characters were likable in my mind. Christian Slater is doing, like, this nasally Jack Nicholson impression for the entire thing.
He was terrible in this.
He was so bad. And it's like...
I loved it.
I can't fathom how he became...
Hey, Veronica, you want to come down to the basement later? Yeah.
I can't fathom how Christian Slater became, like, a go-to guy in Hollywood for, like, whatever, 4 or 5 years in the 90s, because he was awful in this movie. And, like, everything that's happened in this movie... I think has happened way more effectively in other movies. And I think it gets, again, with the heavy handedness kind of talking about, what was I talking about? Which movie was I mentioning?
Cable Guy.
Yeah. Cable Guy.
Cable Guy.
Thank you.
There were 6 movies. You have to give me a second. Can't guess the right one.
So it's like, I mean, okay, so what's his name? J.D., Jason Dean, Christian Slater's dad.
Hey, it's me, Jason Dean, just call me J.D.
He and his dad have this really bizarre relationship, and his dad is, like, of course, a demolition man, and he gets everything.
Not to be confused with the Stallone movie.
Right, thank you, because the confusion was running rampant.
It was there, don't worry.
Jason obviously pulls these kind of crazy tendencies from his dad, who loves blowing up these buildings, but it's like, that's the totality of his character. It's just like, he wants to incite chaos, and there's never really any delving into why, or he says something at the end about how he's not loved or something, and I'm like, really? Like, that's why this guy is such an asshole? I don't know, I was just really disappointed.
Well, he did see his mom blow up.
Yeah.
In the library. That kind of messed him up, I think.
I guess. I don't know. I was really disappointed with the whole thing. I didn't find it particularly funny. I didn't like Shannon Doherty, Winona Ryder, any of the characters. Christian Slater was particularly offensive in my mind with just how bad he was.
Third Heather? She was pretty hot.
Not the Heather that died.
The Heather that was trying to go OD on pills.
Cheerleader?
The one who was pulling a Jesse Spano.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm so scared.
And I think, like, even the dialogue in this movie, you know, like, they have these kind of, this, like, heightened high school, like, I don't know, almost Diablo Cody-esque thing where they're trying to, you know, they say, like, what's your damage and get crucial and, like, stuff that nobody really says, like, very, like we were saying earlier, stuff that nobody says, and it doesn't really, I don't know, it doesn't ever, didn't ever feel like a real thing to me, and I realized the whole movie is supposed to be heightened. I mean, freaking Christian Slater pulls out a gun and shoots blanks in kids' faces in a high school cafeteria and is somehow
not
expelled. That was pretty
badass. they were blanks, Ben.
No, I know.
This was pre-metal detectors and
it was pre-Columbine, and that's like, you know, there's no way a movie like this would exist immediately after Columbine or even now. I don't know if they would go this far with something.
No,
like that.
Definitely not.
Because it, you know, especially like I feel like society is a little bit more sensitive now to stuff like that. Like, all the complaining about how, like, kids are getting their ideas from movies and stuff. I feel like that wasn't that big of a thing back in the late 80s when this movie came out.
I think they could make a movie like this, but they wouldn't be able to, like, spin it into a comedy like Heather's is kind of trying to be. I mean, Heather's definitely has, like, some messages behind it mm-hmm. that, for better or worse, you know, may not have read to you, but I knew kind of what they were trying to say. But they also weren't trying to be too preachy about it. I mean, they were trying to be like, look at the ridiculousness that can go on in high school and look at the kind of the just facetious things that can go on with the media. Like you have the media jump on one thing and it's kind of weird that, I mean, it seems ridiculous in the movie where they turn like teen suicide into like a safe sex thing where it's like, whether you're going to kill yourself or not, you better know how to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in the 80s they were trying to do stuff like, protect, you know, safe sex and like, we know you're going to do it, so make sure you do it safely so like AIDS sure. doesn't spread and stuff. But they just kind of took it like a notch farther with something a little more ridiculous like suicide where they're like, yeah, you know, we're not going to fight to prevent you. It's more of like a glamour thing, like a glamour activity.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, coverage in the media can sometimes almost spin it like that, you know, for a more entertaining purpose, can turn like horrible things into something that becomes like everyday occurrences, and then the kind of the shock that you would have felt initially is gone. So, you know, like the one girl jumps in front of the bus or a car or whatever, Martha Dump Truck, whatever her name was, and they're like, oh, she's just trying to be cool, like the other three suicides that happened, is, you know, there's no shock. Yeah. Or, you know, human emotion to it anymore.
Right. Yeah,
and I think
that's
kind of what the whole movie was surrounding itself.
Yeah, no, it totally is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, anyway. But the only person that kind of looked at it like that was the guidance counselor, like the kind of hippie, crazy teacher, whatever she was. And then
she was one of the antagonists. Though.
Yeah.
She was the one spinning it into something that you know, has no real meaning behind it.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say.
Like, hold hands and everything's better, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like she, you know, when the first quote unquote suicide happens, she's the only one in like the boardroom of teachers who like is talking about, you know, like let's look at what this actually is and not, you know, like let's get emotionally invested here. And then, yeah, she goes on to be like the biggest problem of all by like orchestrating this kind of fake TV thing and, you know,
right.
having the news cameras be there and just like turn it into this media sensation. But I don't know. Like, I don't really have much to say about this movie. So I'll let you guys kind of maybe say why you liked it or just like pick out, you know, some certain sections that you think bear conversation points.
Go ahead, Kate.
I mean, I think it's funny. I'm sorry if you don't think it's funny, because I think a lot of it's funny. I don't know. Like, I mean, the Heathers are so awful, but they're really hilarious to watch, even as you want to punch them in the face, like when they do the note thing with Martha Dump Truck. And I don't know. What do you want me to say?
No, I mean, comedy obviously is like the most subjective thing. Like, you know, some people can find something hilarious, others not so much. I don't know.
Well, what were some of your favorite parts, let's say?
I mean,
like,
what
are the funny parts, you think? You can talk about the parts of the movie. You can talk about plot, too, on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, just the first half is really funny, just when you see Veronica interacting with the Heathers. And I think it's funny because I think that Veronica, like, obviously thinks that she's better than them and she's, like, a better person, but she's not. And that, to me, is funny. Like, Veronica isn't, like, you don't root for her. And if this was, like, a different movie, she would be. Like, she would, like, in Mean Girls, where Lindsay Lohan's character is, like, obviously so much, like, nicer and cooler, I guess, than the rest of the Mean Girls. Mm-hmm. Veronica's not. Like, she's just as messed up as the rest of them, and she just happens to be the one who survives.
Yeah. She kind of happens to be the one that the story follows, like, the protagonist. You know, it could have picked anybody. And they're all equally vapid, I think.
It could have followed Shannon Doherty. Like, she has kind of an interesting rise.
Right, and they both kind of, like, everyone in this movie has, or I guess in particular Veronica and Shannon Doherty's character, have this kind of, rise and fall. Like, they both have interesting arcs. It just, I don't know, the comedy wasn't really there for me. I think everything was just a little too, like, ham-fisted, and the suicide cell. Tyler, right. go.
Yeah, there's there's a lot of, like, Tim Burton-esque aspects of the film where it's comedy because it's so ridiculous. And if you notice, the minister in the church at all the funerals was in Beetlejuice, and so was Winona Ryder, which I thought was kind of cool. But like the idea that they play croquet of all the sports that the Heathers, like, they could be playing, like, I don't know, they could have just been watching TV, but instead they're outside, like, talking about stuff while playing croquet. And just kind of, you know, the idea that she sits down and eats pate every day with her parents, and their dad says something along the lines of, like, why do I do this? She's like, because you're an idiot. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Like, every day that goes on, and just that kind of made me chuckle. I mean, Winona Ryder's character, she is kind of, you don't really know if she's a good guy or a bad guy.
I mean, she uses a monocle when she's writing in her journal.
Yeah, like, that kind of stuff was just kind of like, the fuck, man? She can't see out of her other eye? Is that how that works? And then when she's, like, writing in the journal, she's, like, saying what she writes. And I swear she has, like, 3 words per line in that journal.
She's got some massive handwriting.
Yeah. But I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting because she starts out as, like, this character who's like, okay, I want to be cool, so I join the Heathers, and then she realizes kind of what the Heathers do, and she doesn't like that anymore, so she starts hanging out with JD and does, like, his thing, kills people, and then she realizes that, okay, well, I don't want to do that anymore, now I want to save everybody and be nice to everybody and kind of take charge at the end. And I don't know, I just like characters that basically are kind of real to me, because I sometimes do things and I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore, and then I'll do something else, and then I'm like, that sucks, and then move on. But I think, you know, like, speaking of Heather 3, the hot one, the cheerleader one, like, you assume that all the Heathers would do exactly the same thing, because Heather 1 died, Heather 2, Shannon Doherty took over, and you would assume that if Shannon Doherty got killed, that Heather 3 would take over. Mm-hmm. But then you kind of learn later on that she's not really that bad in the first place. Like, she's not as maniacal as the first two Heathers are.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's actually somebody who's legitimately lost, as opposed to, like, you know, what they're trying to portray as, like, these cool, vapid people are actually meaningful people. I think that's, like you said, Ben, that most of the characters are vapid and they don't have any emotion. I think that's the fact of the movie.
Yeah.
Is that it's pure ridiculous that, or purely ridiculous that these vapid people are then turned into heroes because they kill themselves. And I think that's why Winona Ryder has such a trouble. I mean, maybe you're Veronica in this scenario, Ben, because you see what's going on in the movie as she sees in her life, and you're like, what is this? This isn't funny.
I don't know. I think
this doesn't make sense.
Like, I agree with everything you're saying, and, you know,
as you should.
There's no particular point that I'm like, oh no, I find a lot of, you know, whatever. I disagree heavily with what you're saying, but there's this thing where you just mentioned it, where she kind of starts out one way and then has these, like, gradual character changes, and I just didn't feel like any of them were earned. Like, it seemed like they were all just very, like, impetuous and kind of, and I don't know, maybe that's the point. Maybe I'm missing something on that level of, like, maybe this is how kids in high school are supposed to be, because they don't, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just missing something on like a level. This movie just didn't click with me in the way that it did with you guys, or the way that it did with maybe general audiences. Because this movie is like a, maybe not general audiences, but this movie's a cult classic.
Yeah.
And I was wondering why. And watching it, it's like, okay, it spawned Clueless. It spawned Mean Girls. But that's the only reason why I can appreciate this movie, because it spawned two much better movies that cover a lot of the same territory in much, much more effective ways, I think. This one, it just has, I don't know, like when Christian Slater's character tries to blow up the school at the end just to... He's like, chaos, man. Like, chaos killed the dinosaurs. It's like, what the fuck are you saying? Like, what is going on in this movie?
I love it
like,
when you do your Jack Nicholson impression.
Like, Christian Slater, like, the JD going from just being kind of like a rebel bad boy to, oh, no, I'm going to kill a bunch of people and not care about it. Like, that's a pretty big shift.
Yeah, and it's like, what is there an implied history of him, like, killing people
that's
and blowing up schools?
That's what I was, like, wondering about. Like, I always kind of wait for that to come up. Like, oh, he's been to all these different schools and something similar has happened at every school. And we, maybe that was originally in the script and that was just cut out. But, like, the feeling is that this isn't something that happens just once.
Yeah, yeah.
He keeps mentioning how his dad was like tried but acquitted. Maybe that was actually him.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the movie kind of hints at certain things that I would have liked it to explore a little bit further, and then takes things that I got, like messages that I understood, and just hammers them over and over and over again where I'm like, okay, fine, I get it. Jesus, calm down.
Well, like a good example of things being hammered into you is their colors. In the beginning, they're all wearing, like, you know, the first Heather is, like, she's always red. And so, like, she'll have something on that, like, she'll have on a pair of, like, red shorts or something. And the hot Heather will have, like, yellow socks. And it's not over the top. And then as the movie goes on, it's like, well, here's Heather 1's locker, and it's totally red. And now Shannon Doherty is the queen bee, so she has to wear this giant red scrunchy thing.
Yeah.
And it goes from being, like, kind of funny and something you notice in the background to be, just being like, pram, pram, pram.
Yeah.
That's me hammering a home a point.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it could be like any other movie that is a cult classic where it speaks to some people, not to others. Lebowski, Big Lebowski comes to mind. You know, if like,
sure.
If you take two people, or let's say 10 people, and they haven't seen it before and they see it, and then maybe like three of them will get it and the rest of them will just be like, what was that?
Yeah. And so, that maybe that's a good example, because I didn't really understand The Big Lebowski the first time I watched it, and it took me a couple viewings to really kind of fall in love with that movie. And I
totally get that film.
We talked about this on the Big Lebowski episode of this podcast, so people can go back and listen to that if they want to.
Sam Elliott plays God, everybody.
Can we have a special guest chime in?
Yeah.
Sure.
This is Silas Lesnick from ComingSoon.net, also known as my boyfriend.
All right, Silas. Hey there. How's it going?
I did want to say one of the things about Heather's, and I do think it maybe relates to the colors, is that the movie plays as kind of a parody of Rebel Without a Cause.
Interesting.
And there's the idea that sort of the same thing in Fight Club, where you can start the sense of like, well, chaos is cool and being a rebel is cool. But when it goes too far, and I think that's what Christian Slater is. He's like, well, what if James Dean, Rebel Without a Cause, actually had his way and did whatever he wanted, and where would it go that's negative?
Man, that sounds
like... He did drive a car off a cliff, didn't he?
That sounds like a really fascinating reading, and I wish I could relate to it, but I embarrassingly haven't seen Rebel Without a Cause.
Oh!
So, yeah.
But
that does make sense, especially since the initials are the same and freaking his last name is the same.
Yes.
That's a James Dean vehicle, Ben.
Yeah. So
there's also another film that, while I don't think it pays tribute to, is another one that is nice to check out, which is Lindsay Anderson's If, which is a similar English private school. It has Malcolm McDowell, and it sort of builds to the heroes leading a sort of like Columbine-like massacre at the end.
Mm. Mm. Chops without a cause.
God, Tyler.
Ben, that Malcolm McDowell, that's not the guy from Planet of the Apes.
No, it's not. We were talking about
that earlier. It was Roddy McDowell I was thinking of.
Right.
who I think has been dead for like 20 years.
I can't confirm or deny that.
That's why I thought it was funny. That's why I thought it was funny. It was at the Hero Complex thing, because I was like, wow, Ronnie McDowell's still alive? Although he could be.
That was Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm McDowell. Well, yeah, when I saw a picture of him, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. The guy that kind of looks like...
Terrence Stamp.
The guy who played Terrence Stamp, yeah. It's
the guy who killed Captain Kirk.
General Zod.
He's spoiler alert.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
From Star Trek Generations.
Oh, that is a big spoiler alert, yeah. Yeah, you already named the movie. I was going to say, we won't name which movie that was, but yeah, it was definitely Star Trek Generations. He comes out of the Nexus, dies right by bridge.
All right, we are coming out of the Nexus on this episode. Well, man, Silas, I need to check out Rebel Without a Cause, because that sounds like maybe something that would have given me a little bit more to latch onto in watching Heather's, like, looking at it through that lens. So thank you for pointing that out.
I like the idea of it being a parody of something, too, because you had a lot of, like, high school angst movies. Was it this, 89?
Yeah.
1989? You had a lot of teen angst, high school angst movies come out during the 80s.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, you got the Beef Rest Club and the Brat Pack little situation there.
Yep.
And you know, I hate the Breakfast Club because it's so preachy. And then hold on, but I liked Heather's because it was kind of making fun of the preachiness of what could have been a parody of the Breakfast Club.
I mean, I guess. How dare you?
I piss a lot of people off because I don't like that movie.
Kate is flabbergasted.
Blah.
It's just they never in the Breakfast Club, like, you know, they're never going to talk to each other on Monday. Like,
oh yeah, oh seriously, yeah.
Like, and he, the jock, only digs that one girl, the creepy ass goth girl, because she cleans herself up and looks completely different, so he's still only looking at what's on the outside.
Yeah, he doesn't learn,
so no one learns anything.
Yeah, I guess
a miserable movie.
The only way you could have proven that somebody learned something is if we saw what happened on the next Monday.
Yeah, on Monday, because somebody says something is like, "Are you guys going to talk to me?" I think it was the nerd that says, "Are you guys going to talk to me on Monday?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, definitely, dude. Yeah, yeah." You know that's not happening.
Yeah, that's not gonna. I mean, maybe like he'll say hi to like Emilio Estevez, but he's not. His friends, he's not going to say hi back.
He'll say hi while Estevez is dumping his head in the toilet.
Well, Tyler, I think, you know, both of you guys bring up good points about how this movie could be parodying something. I'm just not entirely sure what it is, because Heather's definitely has the DNA of a parody because it goes so far. And I don't know if it's parodying any particular movie, like any specific film, but I
or
think
just like the genre.
Right, just the genre in general, and maybe
yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's just it works as like a reaction to the time, you know, to kind of what was going on. And like you said, I like the AIDS correlation that you drew earlier. I think that's particularly spot on. But
you remember in that cartoon Recess, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
There was like the Ashleys.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I get that now.
Yeah. Totally. That was great. Great cartoon.
Can I throw in some trivia that I learned while reading about this movie on its IMDb page?
Please.
Okay, so Heather number one, you know, remember when she says very early in the film to Shannon Doherty, did you eat a brain tumor for breakfast?
Mm-hmm.
Heather number one actually died of a brain tumor.
Hmm.
In
Wait, real
the
life.
Actress?
Yes, isn't that horrifying?
Wow, that is, yeah.
And then, like, that blonde dude who's, like, kind of, like, the do-gooder type who kind of reminds you of Neil Patrick Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he just wants to get into Harvard. Yeah.
Yeah. He, like, you know how when at Heather number one's funeral, he's, like, praying over her body, and he's like, oh, please, God, don't ever let me, you know, I don't ever want to commit suicide. I don't think I can handle it.
No.
I think I'm going with this. He killed himself.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, the IMDb trivia page for Heather's is, like, really upsetting.
So this movie predicts the future.
Yeah.
And this is like, it's like Poltergeist level connections of...
Yeah.
So that means that Shannon Doherty is eventually going to rule Hollywood.
Once
she gets her degree from that obscure college she does commercials for, she's definitely taking over.
Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, Tyler, because that's what I was getting ready to talk about. I actually worked on a couple of those commercials with Shannon Doherty. And she's, I need to say, she's pretty cool in real life. So
please tell me you filmed the scene where she's like dressed up in the different costumes. She's like, I could be a doctor. Yep. I could be a chef.
Yep.
It's like Barbie. It's like, I'm veterinarian Barbie.
Yeah, and I ran the teleprompter on those commercials in case anyone was wondering. So there you go.
I should pull an Anchorman, see if she'd actually, she would say something on the teleprompter. Man, that's really weird.
Yeah, but
I think, can I add something too? And I don't know, this is just me recollecting. I'm not researching anything right now.
Do it.
But I think I've seen an alternate ending to Heather's.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe I had it in like a fever dream or something.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I remember seeing like an ending where the school actually exploded and they killed everybody. And it was Winona Ryder and JD, whatever his real name is, Christian Slater, walking away
smoking. I
feel like
I also have that like in my head.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I'm not crazy. Yes.
Hmm.
Cause I thought, because I think they light their cigarettes using the fireball from the school exploding. And so I thought I had seen the ending of Heather's, and then I watched the movie, and it wasn't the ending.
I'm going to read from
spoiler alert.
I'm going to read from the Wikipedia page here. There's a section that says alternate ending. So it says, in an alternate ending, JD dies in the boiler room, and Veronica is shown walking through the school, though only from the back. This is interrupted by shots of the bomb counting down, showing that Veronica had not shut it off. When she reaches the front of the school, Veronica turns around, allowing the viewer to see that the bomb was strapped to her chest. It hits zero, the screen turns black, and Veronica says, boom. The next scene is the school prom. A banner says, what a waste, oh the humanity. The students begin to dance, soon with people from different cliques as couples. Dead characters, including Kurt and JD, make appearances. The Heathers do a ring around the Rosie. The camera moves up to reveal Martha Dunstock, then a smiling Veronica.
Wait, so it was like Return of the Jedi, where the ghosts are just hanging out with the party?
Yeah, or like the very end of Titanic, maybe.
Wait. There were ghosts at the end of Titanic?
You know, like the old woman throws the heart of the ocean.
Oh, that's right.
At the
she recollects.
And,
yes. Okay. That ending.
Right. So.
But Tyler and I are both crazy, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because we both remember an ending that doesn't actually exist.
We're dream travelers. We've traveled before via dreams.
That is.
Someone must have like parodied it or something.
Maybe.
And gotten it confused.
Yeah.
Although now I want to see a movie called Dream Travelers.
Let's do it. Let's make it.
Write that movie, Tyler. There you go.
I'll write it. I'll write the hell out of that movie.
All right.
I'll write it like Winona Ryder writes in her journal. So it'll be like 7,000 pages long.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, do you guys want to do any sort of concluding thoughts on this film?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'll go first. Yeah, I mean, like I said, Gross Point Blank, kind of like a dark thing with high school. If you didn't like The Breakfast Club, like me, check out Heather's, because it's kind of an alternate look at teen high school angst and stuff that's kind of funny if you like the, I don't know, Burton-esque obscure things happening in films. Like, in layman's terms, see this movie.
But you got to bring it back at the end. No, there was that one line where Veronica says, my teen angst bullshit has a body count. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of a directly mentioning what you're talking about. But I don't know. Kate, what do you think? General thoughts? Or concluding?
If you thought more people should have died in Mean Girls, watch Heathers.
I like that. Yeah. Again, I don't understand this movie on the level that everybody else seems to, or maybe I understand, I just don't appreciate it. I don't understand the rules of croquet, however. I do not get that sport at all. They
really?
Seem
like
to just
football, but I guess not.
They seem to be able to just pick up those balls at random and replace them wherever they wanted. That was
yes
what
that's part okay with croquet. You put like a symmetric, there's a symmetric pattern of rings that you have to, you go, and then there's two sticks at the end, and you start off on one side, and the name of the game or the goal of the game is to go from one stick to the other while going through the rings.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hit somebody else's ball, like if you tap their ball with your ball, you can set up your ball right next to theirs and basically kick it out like they were doing, and kick it out of the game, and they have to play back into the game.
Right.
Which, of course, costs them strokes.
Of course.
It's a very sexual game. sticks and balls and strokes and things.
Right.
But, yeah, it's a lazy afternoon grassy game.
Okay, well, I guess the sex scene on the croquet court makes a lot more sense then, as you just mentioned, that game is very sexual.
So, oh, it's very sexual, Ben.
All right. Yeah, I didn't like this movie, and I would say that it's not really worth seeing. I would say watch Mean Girls and Clueless, and that's about it. So, Tyler, why don't you rev up the old Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching for next week?
Yeah, sure, Kate. You remember the old Apple II, right?
I do. All right. Very fondly.
Let's bring her out. All right, next week we'll be watching A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints, starring Channing Tatum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Shia LaBeouf and Robert Downey Jr., I think.
Wait, you didn't tell me Shia LaBeouf was in this.
He plays Robert Downey Jr.
Wow.
What?
That sounds like Looper, where Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Bruce Willis. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Or like in, Ocean's 12, where Julia Roberts plays Julia Roberts.
Yes, just like that. Awesome. All right, well, yeah, Guide to Recognize Your Saints is on Netflix Instant, so people can check that out. Supposedly one of the good Channing Tatum performances before he kind of dropped off and then has hit this meteoric rise this year. So
Ben, you know what the porn version of A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints is?
Please tell me.
I'm just kidding. I'm not gonna say it. I'll say it off the air. Okay. It's pretty bad.
It involved the word taint, didn't it?
It does. You guessed it.
I knew you were going to go there. Okay.
No, you went there. I didn't say anything.
All right. So if you guys want to watch that movie, you can shoot us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. We don't have any emails this week or voicemail, but we do have one new Twitter follower. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. At Dr. Ellen K is now following us, so thanks for following.
She's actually a psychologist who has a daily radio show. I did awesome. Some backstory on that. So you can actually call her, and she might use you on her podcast. Okay. Like, call her with problems, a la Frasier.
Right,
the fictional psychologist.
Every psychologist just works just like Frasier, yeah. Okay, so Tyler, you want to hit us with the character name game one more time so we can finish
that
up?
I do. The character name game, do you remember how to play this, Kate? You want to guess the movie that this character is in? Okay, let me say the name real quick. Although I liked your Matt Thompson is the name.
Matt Thompson.
And let me preface that with, it is a military ranking. He has a military ranking on the IMDb page. I thought I wouldn't confuse you with, like, it's like Sergeant Matt Thompson or something.
Oh, so he's like a sergeant or a captain or something?
Something along those lines, yes. I don't remember.
That's like a really, really general name.
It is. So we have to keep in mind this probably has to do with either Madagascar 3 or Prometheus, because those were like the two big movies that came out this weekend.
It definitely might have something to do with Madagascar 3.
Okay, all right. So,
but it might not.
Tyler, you're over here. So
balls,
Matt
sucks.
Thompson. So we've got like Ben Stiller, Chris Rock, David.
Prometheus, Ben.
Okay. All right. That's Prometheus. All right. Matt Thompson. Is this a Michael Fassbender character, maybe?
No.
No? Okay.
Is it any thoughts?
A Guy Pearce thing?
Yes.
Oh.
Kate, follow through on that?
Okay, Guy Pearce.
Sergeant Matt Thompson?
It wasn't the Space Prison movie.
No?
I bet you know it, Kate.
Think of female director.
Oh, Hurt Locker!
Hurt Locker is correct. Hurt Locker, starring Guy Pearce as Sergeant Matt Thompson, who was also in Prometheus.
Indeed. All right. Good one. Man, Tyler.
Who's that British director that makes like Lock, Stock, and Smoking Barrels?
That would be Guy Pearce. Or I'm sorry, Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie, okay.
He was married to Madonna.
Oh.
Ugh, that's gross.
Well, yeah, Tyler, that was a surprisingly reserved character name game on normally you go like 15 steps and make it all but impossible.
You guys had to put up with my jokes today, so I figured I'd keep it easy.
In layman's terms.
It's taint, isn't it? That's the best line of this episode.
All right. Well, let's go around the circle and just tell people where they can track down more of our work on the internet this week. Kate Erblin, let's start with you.
You can find me at filmschoolrejects.com. And I also do reviews for boxofficemagazine.com. And I write for MSN Movies has a blog called The Hit List. You can just Google that. And you can find me on Twitter at Caterbland, K-A-T-E-R-B-L-A-N-D. Yes, it's missing an E in the middle.
Nice.
I come from a land down under Bland.
All right, Tyler, how about you?
Kate, you also do a weekly like girls discussion, which I sometimes look at. I don't read all the way through because there is a lot of reading.
Well, it's a rotating cast of characters that Britt Hayes does over at Screen Crush. And she's had me on it, like, you know, there's only been 8 episodes, and I think I've done 3 of them with her. So I think I'm probably the most recurring guest.
You think you guys could have Lena Dunham on? Because I really dig that show, and I think discussions of that show are definitely worthwhile.
I love it. I love the show. I love the show when I first saw it. They did 3 episodes at South By, and I think it's just getting better. So,
yeah. I think it's season finale this week or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, probably.
Good stuff.
Well, you guys can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast. And you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Week podcast. No, not really. I'm deleting that from this little rundown right now.
Hey, Ben, you want to know where you can find me?
Yes, tell me.
The solarsentinel.blogspot.com, a couple of new pieces on there. I'm dealing with the Alan Scott Green Lantern coming out as gay.
Yeah, it's only the
story. And Twitter handle NJNM Podcast.
Awesome. You can
talk to me that way. And if you say something funny, we usually read it on here. So say something funny.
Cool. All right.
Like in layman's term.
God.
Classic.
Music for this episode will come courtesy of the Heathers soundtrack or score, whichever music I can
find. Big fun.
Yeah, exactly. Special thanks to Kate Erblin for stopping by, donating some time, hanging out with us. Always good to have you on the show, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cool. And we'll be watching A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints for next week. So check that out. Hit us up with an email, voicemail, or something, and we will see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.